As world events change rapidly with Russia's aggression towards Ukraine, Russia being a nuclear state, well, the United States, NATO, and the European Union are all watching Putin's next move. We'll talk to Colonel Lawrence Sellin and former CIA Del Wilber on the strategy behind the conflict. And as a gallon of gas and a gallon of milk both rise to record prices, housing, buying, and renting are seeing record highs as well. Inflation, energy is at the forefront. Economist Harry Dent will help us put it all in perspective and has some real advice for all Americans. And finally, we see the patriotism in Ukraine and we see the patriotism in Canada, combined with some key victories here in the U.S. Well, Professor Larry Bell explains that there is optimism. We see that people of all political persuasions are demanding their freedom. Big program ahead on Viewpoint this Sunday.
Time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit, and bring forth real talk from real people about real news, providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation, all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to the Weekend News Magazine, Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Outloud here. Well, as we talked up front in the intro, as world events are changing now pretty rapidly with Russia's aggression towards Ukraine, you know, there's a lot of ways to look at this conflict. What I'd like to do next is look at this in a more unconventional way and try to bring a little more clarity to what the long-range outcomes of this conflict may very well result in. This has ramifications that are far-reaching. All over the world, to be sure, and definitely here right in America. So we'll start this conversation off, my friends, with Colonel Lawrence Sellin joins me. He served in both Iraq and Afghanistan. He worked as a research physiologist at the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases at Fort Detrick. And also Del Wilber is here as well. Del is a former CIA and Department of Defense intelligence and counterterrorism officer, serving overseas in Eastern, Western Europe and Middle East. And both have a really good perspective of world affairs, and delighted to have both of you here. Now, looking at this head-to-head contest, Russia outnumbers, let's be clear, I mean, they're outnumbering Ukraine in all categories, which when I say that, I'm talking both active and reserves, talking tanks, artillery, helicopters, planes, so forth. And we're talking not just small little numbers, by numbers of 4 to 5 to 1 at best. So clearly, people were calling this an unfair fight, that sort of thing right away. Now, the buildup to this, when just before Putin struck, listening to just about all military officials from the early start, the one consistent narrative was that Ukraine never had a chance. This was Russia's victory. And that was surely before a shot was ever fired here. Let's start, Colonel Lawrence Sellin, with you and really take a look here, please, at the narrative that was put out there initially with Ukraine. And we see the fight in the men and women there in Ukraine. This country has dug in for a more of a longer fight. What do you make of these early predictions and what's transpired over the weekend here, sir?
Well, Malcolm, I think you're certainly correct that the expectation was that Russia would roll over Ukraine and hasn't. I think most people were rather shocked by the fact that Russia went in from many different directions, north, east, and south, and actually using another country, Belarus, to invade the Ukraine. But the Ukrainians have put up a staunch resistance against the Russians, in particular on all the approaches to the capital of the Ukraine, Kyiv. And I think what we can expect is that the Kyiv will be the center of gravity for this Russia invasion. And Russia's main objective in that case is to capture the capital and decapitate the Ukrainian government. Putin's intent from the beginning has always been to demilitarize Ukraine and at least try to replace Ukrainian government with one more subservient to Russia. So the center of gravity, the focus will be around the capital of Ukraine, Kyiv.
Let me ask you this now, Colonel, to follow up with you there. Sincerely, looking at all the chess pieces right now, do the Ukrainian people really have a chance? Or is their immediate future preordained here once Russia had made the decision to attack? You've seen these things escalate before, and you've seen them go up and down previously, historically. What do you think on this, the immediate future and more of the long range future in the months ahead?
I think the most important factor at this point may be time, because time works against Russia. If Kyiv could be made in a situation where it is to the Russians as Stalingrad was to the Germans in World War II, so the longer Kyiv holds out against the Russians, the more pressure will be brought to bear internationally against Russia, including many of the sanctions kicking in. And also, there is a small but significant domestic pressure inside Russia against this war.
Yeah, we're seeing that's a great point you bring up there, the protests there. Now, to be clear with everybody, it is illegal. They call it tyranny if you protest whatsoever in Russia, and they will indeed lock you up. Your life will change pretty quickly there. And we're seeing videos and stark images of them dragging some of these protesters away and on and on. But and there's a sense of that because I've seen actually other video where the Ukrainian brothers and sisters there are begging Russian mothers to get a hold of their sons. But Putin's got a real grip on that country. He's held the Russian people down for a long, long time here. Think if they could bust free, they might just do that. Those protests you talk about, Colonel Selin, with Russia, I mean, I heard, let me ask you if you heard anything about this before I move on. I heard some actual reports that, and I don't know how true this is, that there could be an internal coup there against Putin, that not everybody's on board with him. You have any sense of that, or you heard anything about that, Colonel?
Yes, I don't know how valid it is at this point, but Putin is, of course, is trying to remove the protesters from it. There was a big protest in St. Petersburg, and a lot of people were arrested. But also, he has shut down any reporting by the main news stations in Russia concerning anything to do with the invasion of Ukraine. Unless it has official approval by his office.
Well, let me talk about Putin a moment here and what he has said. He talked about demilitarizing and denazifying is what he said. And so the Secretary General of the United Nations urged Putin to stop his tanks. Not that that's going to happen, because now you have egg on your face totally. But that's just the way it is, the way these things work. Once you're in, my guess is, Dell, you're sort of all in. I don't think that, okay, so the Secretary General says that, urging him to stop. But that would be a historical moment to see this. This guy, when I say he's all in, and there's a dangerous point to this I want to drive to in a moment here. The Secretary General says, let's give peace a chance. Too many people have already died. Now, Putin gets on television and he describes, I think this was on Friday or so, described the invasion as a special military occupation. Very careful not to call it a war. And he said he wants to, again, demilitarize and denazify the country, speaking about the Ukrainian leadership and so on and so forth. And he actually went further, Dell, and he told the Ukrainian service members to lay down their arms and go home, speaking directly to the Ukrainian soldiers. But there's a love there in Ukraine I don't think we've seen in a while. That is a remarkable point. What do you think about these comments from Putin, demilitarizing and denazifying, and this point about Putin?
Well, I mean, Vladimir Putin's an old KGB, disinformation, expert. I mean, that's his background. That's where he comes from, is the KGB. And he's relying on the same tools that he used decades ago. And he's going to continue to use them because they, it's not so much the messages being sent, it's the intended audience. And, you know, he's doing this to basically give himself an excuse for what he's doing. It's his audience, in a sense, is his own self. And, you know, and he's justifying it, you know, for those reasons.
I want to ask you, Dale, this might be one of the most important questions to me, because I look at this conflict again, differently than most people. I look at things at listeners know at 50,000 feet. I try to get outside of conventional thinking. I like to look at things unconventionally. And I want to ask you this. It's an important question. Looking back now over the last, I'm going to say 10 years, roughly, okay, and a lot's happened with Russia, both politically here at home, how we've abused and brutalized the relationship throughout the Trump years into the Biden years and so on and so forth, and also 2014, back with Obama in office, everything that transpired there. I want to ask you, looking back over the last, I'm going to say 10 years or so, looking right now at this conflict today, what could the United States and the West have done differently to engage Russia?
Well, you know, as I wrote recently in a column that that you had on the platform, back when the Soviet Union fell, Putin was really, really stung badly by what he perceived as all the gloating that the politicians were doing here in the West. And, you know, and I think at the time he you know, made up his mind that he was going to turn the tables. And that's what his goal and his focus has been for all that time since, is to kind of, you know, get a little even with the West and pay us back a little bit for, you know, for what he believes were the insults that were levied against Mother Russia. You know, above all else, Putin views himself as a Russian patriot. We wouldn't be facing this situation right now if we would have handled Vladimir Putin and handled the dissolution of the Soviet Union differently.
Yeah. It does bring it back to a moment, doesn't it? I want to ask you, Colonel Sellin, I think, very important question. Looking back, same thing over the last 10 years, what could we have done differently to engage Russia? Because my sense is, Colonel, my guess is we really blew it here. And I think making a mockery out of the Russian relationship politically, the left and the right here in the States have absolutely done that. What could the scenario have been differently in your mind?
Well, first of all, I agree with everything that Dell said about what has happened in the past, but I would add something that we shouldn't have done. I think there's a direct line between the tragic events in the Ukraine that we're seeing now and the years of the anti-Russian hysteria that has been stoked up by the Democrats and the U.S. Media. There's also the problem with the Biden family and now the Biden administration, because they were paid by oligarchs within Ukraine, they essentially closed off every off-ramp for Russia. And at the same time, they were misleading the Ukraine into thinking that we would defend it. In fact, just before the invasion, Biden was on the telephone with President Zelensky of Ukraine and promising that if Russia invaded, the United States would come and help them. And it didn't happen. So both in the past and very recently, we've made some very large blunders.
Yeah, what you say there is accurate. I mean, it's one thing to make comments like that, Colonel, and promise things or overpromise things. It's another thing to deliver. And of course, when it comes to politicians, you know, you can never watch their lips move because you never know what's really going to come out. All right. To the west is Poland, NATO, right there immediately. And one of the other big urban centers there, Lviv, is right there as well. Big urban market there. I think it's the second largest potentially in Ukraine, or pretty close to it, I think. And on the western side. And all this is divided through the river there that runs right through west and east Ukraine. With NATO countries given the path for supplies, ammo, which we assume is going to happen now if it hasn't already started here, I'm wondering here, Colonel, I'd like to come back to you on this question here, strategically looking. Will Putin look at this as the West interfering? And does this put NATO in the crosshairs of this fight?
Well, I think Vladimir Putin's intention to break up NATO as best as he can, the initiating action against Ukraine is one way to keep Ukraine out, and it also, you know, threatens other countries in a sense about joining NATO. I don't know. Moscow has threatened both Finland and Sweden about joining NATO. So I think that comes part and parcel with what's happening now. But I think it's very important, not only that the Ukrainian government in Kyiv is sustained, but also, as you mentioned, Malcolm, that we're supplying the Ukrainians, and we can, because there are many countries that are bordering on Western Ukraine that belong to NATO. So I would hope that it is going on as we speak to sustain the resistance of the Ukrainians against Russia.
This NATO piece is, I think, one of the strategic missing pieces here we're talking about. We've seen with the Olympics, Vladimir Putin, Xi Jinping, you know, having coffee together, whatever was transpiring there. There's a lot of talk I've heard from that, and I'm sure you've heard it as well, as to the sort of agreements, private agreements, these two dictators have made with each other to off-balance the balance of power in the world and the United States, for sure. And this is one of the things that concerns me the most, actually. And with that said, and looking at NATO, it looks to me, and what really is unsettling, is we've pushed Russia further and further away, as we've just said. And I think listeners need to understand this is the really horrible job our political class has done in our country. And I think this is going to be to the demise of a lot of things in the future, what I'm speaking about right here. What if we had pulled Russia closer? Let me just ask you that, because I haven't answered that question before, Colonel Selland. What if we had pulled them in? What if we had, you know, I know NATO was created to, you know, it was a blockade against the Soviet Union. It was to connect all the forces over here in the West. I mean, I get it. But what if we had got unconventional and changed the way of thinking? And I told listeners this past week, and what if we had gotten Russia? He hinted back in the 80s to Bill Clinton about become part of NATO. What if we had done that? I mean, is that far-fetched, or was that a possibility?
No, I don't think it's far-fetched at all, Malcolm. I think President Trump was trying to do that. He understood that if we were more antagonistic to Russia, it would drive Russia closer to China. And President Trump understood that China was our main adversary globally. Mm-hmm. So I think if we had taken the steps that you raised, that we would be in a better position, and we would probably have not encountered this Russian invasion of Ukraine, because Russia felt cornered. If Ukraine was going to become part of NATO, it would be a dagger essentially directed at the heart of Russia. So I think if we had appreciated Russia's security concerns correctly early on, we would not be in the situation we are now.
Let's talk about a nuclear Russia now, Dale, to the point here. Putin comes out, he says this, and this was an echo that echoed around the world. Prior to striking, he said to anyone who would consider interfering from the outside, if you do, you will face consequences greater than any you have faced in history. That was right there. I mean, before he went there, he wanted everybody to hear those comments. Now, I want to read you, Dell, a listener comment, and I'd like you to opine on this, because there are several points in here that are quite fascinating. And here it is. You can't fight a conventional war with Vladimir Putin and win, because he will turn to nukes. Biden is fallen into Putin's trap. The only way to fight Russia is to out-technology them. We have to totally neutralize their nuclear capability or face possible extinction. The United States used to work on a Star Wars program to thwart nuclear attacks from the Putins of the world. We need to throw all research and technology into such programs warp speed, and then clear the earth of garbage like Putin. Sleepy Joe Biden needs to wake up. By the time his sanctions become effective, World War III may be over to our detriment. What do you say to that? Listen or comment, Dale.
You know, as you were reading that, my thoughts went back to Ronald Reagan, when he came under a great deal of ridicule on that when he proposed the Star Wars program. Yeah. and how they were saying that, this is crazy. You know, Reagan's out of his mind, that, you know, the technology is not there, or it can't be produced, or it was a waste of money, and that. And boy, how prophetic was Ronald Reagan, to what we're looking at nowadays. And, the one thing I would coattail on to what the colonel just said a minute or so ago was when this whole thing first started, I tried to look at it from the perspective of Vladimir Putin. Mm-hmm. And if you think back to the Cuban Missile Crisis, well, we got pretty upset when Russia put some missiles in Cuba, didn't we? And we forced them to take them out. And Putin, above all else, is a student of history, and he remembers that. And I think that was part of his calculation when he was designing his thinking about his plans, that what he intended to do was to have a similar response, you know, that we would back off from Ukraine NATO membership and basically pull our missiles out like Russia did so many years ago. Your writer or your listener is absolutely correct in that we can't beat Soviet Union in a ground war, because that's exactly what Vladimir Putin is certainly capable of, making the decision to go to tactical nukes. And so we've got to go back to what Ronald Reagan said so many years ago, and what was just said by your listener, is to outsmart him and out technology him.
Yeah. Here we are. I mean, we're revisiting that chapter again, which is unbelievable that we're having this conversation. We all thought this part of the equation was left behind, and that we were onto a simpler life, gentlemen, like bioweapons and cyber attacks and energy grid debacles, you know, the simple things of life. Now we're back to that with the Reagan days. Pretty crazy stuff here. Colonel Sellin, this is a real thing here. I'm going to ask you right out probably a couple of the most difficult points. Dell brings up a perfect example to the missile crisis in Cuba. And I have to tell you, this is where America, I think, gets into trouble. What's good for us is good for us, but not good for others. I think NATO was an absolute concern to Russia out there. Let's be very clear. He has made it very clear. He did not want Ukraine and Belarus to become NATO. He made it very clear. He's seen how NATO was strangling the rest of them over there. We refused to allow him in on the game, on the club. We didn't want him in on the club. We kept him as an enemy. The political class made him a jackass. All of that said, that's a recipe for something. Now, here's what I want to ask you. This Putin, people are questioning today if he's got all those marbles there, if he's, slurring his speech or whatever. Whatever. Is this man back in Russia into a corner? I mean, you've got several things that could come out of this. And this is important here, what we talk about next. And that is, I mean, would he result to strategic, as Dell just said, nuclear activity? If you're going down, what do you do? That's the whole point of the nuclear arsenal. Do you use that? And the other component is the energy going to Europe. He can cut that off in a hot second and probably will, although nobody's really talking about it today to remind everybody. But that's another serious problem. What do you see with this?
Well, I think you're right about both, Malcolm. Europe is highly dependent on Russian natural gas in particular. Some of the countries are between 50 and 70% of their energy requirements and natural gas are coming from Russia. So he could essentially shut that off and turn off the heat and electricity in a large portion of Europe. So that's certainly a concern. And I think it's also true that Vladimir Putin is capable of deploying tactical nuclear weapons. And it depends very much on how far you push him. There was some crazy talk coming from Washington, D.C., in particular from Congressman Kissinger, the Republican from Illinois, talking about a no-fly zone over Ukraine. Now, this is insanity to me, because it would put U.S. Air Force and NATO Air Forces directly against the Russians, and that would certainly drive Vladimir Putin more in the direction of the possibility of using nuclear weapons. So I think these are two concerns, and we should have come to accommodation with Vladimir Putin a long time ago. And I think we still have an opportunity to do it now and to help resolve the current situation in Ukraine that doesn't create a more dangerous situation than we have.
Yeah, and one last follow-up, Colonel, so listeners truly understand, if it got to that point and he was put in the corner and he did exactly what we said just there, do we have any, does the United States have any way to defend against that sort of a Russian nuclear attack?
Only retaliation or the threat of retaliation. If he wants to make a first strike, either tactically or strategically, there's very little we can do to stop that. And Dell was absolutely correct that the Star Wars effort, so as it's called, by President Reagan was the right thing to do at the time, and it is still the right thing to do.
Oh, tremendous thank you to Colonel Lawrence Sellin and Dell Wilbur. And now let me tell you about an exciting new product we are so thrilled to bring to your attention, and that is the Genesis Fogger. It's a game changer for sure, friends. It kills the pathogens and helps keep us all healthy. The whole key to this is breathing cleaner air, which we've learned through the whole COVID deal is essential to good health. You know, almost no one is killing these pathogens in the air, which is where they have the risk of transmission right there. Well, the Genesis Fogger and HOCL is a powerful tool, not only for living with COVID, but it's also perfect for killing other harmful pathogens, including colds and flus, viruses, things of this nature, as well as these superbugs you've been hearing about as well. Well, these contagions are no problem for this brand new Genesis Fogger and HOCL. The fog is a perfectly designed machine that produces like a fine dry mist, if you will, using the HOCL, which quickly kills the germs, the bacteria, and viruses in the air and on the surfaces simultaneously. And it's complete, it's thorough, and at a fraction of the time, my fellow Americans and friends here, we've never seen anything like this before. GenesisFogger.com/outloud. All our listeners get 15% off the purchase of the Genesis Fogger. I kid you not, this is a game changer. The Genesis Fogger and HOCL. It'll help us for the fight forward. We're going to take up next here the economy in a big way on this must listen to segment with economist Harry Dent here. Stay right there. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
It's time to rethink COVID disinfection. A study by Harvard, Drexel, and Virginia Tech concluded, we don't have a single documented case of COVID transmission through surfaces. The reality is that COVID spreads mainly through the air. Shared air is the problem, not shared surfaces. The solution is the Genesis Fogger, which uses natural HOCL to disinfect both air and surfaces simultaneously. It's perfect for home or business. NIH says HOCL may well be the disinfectant of choice for coronaviruses. There's nothing more natural or more effective. Genesis fogs at the precise particle size to combat COVID and other harmful pathogens. It's what's missing from your disinfecting protocol. Visit GenesisFogger.com. America Out Loud listeners receive a 15% discount with promo code OUTLOUD at GenesisFogger.com/OUTLOUD.
Our invincible American spirit drives the most audacious experiment in the history of self-government. America Out Loud celebrates the American spirit every minute of every day. AmericaOutloud.com. Liberty and justice for all. Welcome back to Viewpoint this Sunday. It is Malcolm Out Loud here, and the economic conditions out there have been troubling for some time, with inflation, gas, rising prices, and now with the backdrop of the these issues we're seeing with the Ukraine and Russia's attack and the energy at the center of this. So that is one of the pure indications of a deteriorated market is the energy part of this thing. That's a big conversation I want to have next with you, and inflation and all of that. And we'll do that with Harry Dent joins me. Harry Dent is an economic forecaster, New York Times bestselling author. HarryDent.com. He's got a whole bunch of resources there and a free newsletter and all of that you can check out for sure. He's been a voice for some time about our economy and surely has been on the front lines here. And always a pleasure to have you, Harry, on the program here. So in regards to what we're seeing now with Russia's aggression towards Ukraine and energy in Europe and then energy back here, What sort of repercussions will people feel here in our country based on this conflict out there economically? What do you think?
Well, you know, conflicts come and go. Okay, this is not the biggest thing people need to worry about because it's likely to pass at some point. Putin can't just go totally against Europe and the United States and get away with it. What it is to me is just another trigger that could cause a major stock crash, which is already in the cards. Now, you know, I've been talking about this for years now. People don't realize the largest generation, the baby boomers, peaked in their spending. I mean, greatest boom in history. And I was one of the few people to call it back in the 80s, way back, and say, this is not going to be a boom. This is going to be the greatest boom because it's the largest generation. They peaked in 2007. We had that deep, almost depression-like recession in 2008. But what happened for the first time in history is central banks said, we're not going to let this depression happen. We're going to print money and print more money, and they keep printing more money. And of course, it's having diminishing returns, and we're seeing that. So the stock market already before this really set in looked like, to me, it peaked on January 4th, and we're going into what I call the first crash off of a major bubble, which is usually at least 40%. And in 2.5 months on average, 2 to 3 months. So we're already in this. And I see this as just another perfect trigger, because what we have to understand is this, Malcolm, and it's very simple. There's nothing more simple than the economy goes when new generations are rising in their spending, and then it goes down until the next generation comes along, and then it rises again. Okay. We're not going to see a rising economy naturally until about 2024, when the millennials kick in greater numbers and tilt it back up again. So all of this has been stimulus. And what happens, the only way to offset stimulus is to have things like this happen that cause the markets to weaken anyway, and then the market weakening builds on itself. Again, all I know is those first crashes are where you see half of a whole long-term correction happen in a few months, and I think we're likely in that, and this is just another pin to prick this bubble.
All right, let me ask you now, right now we're seeing gas prices at the pump. This impacts real Americans here, real people. We're all paying that. We're seeing the escalation of that right now. Looking at the circumstances and situation right now, how high could that go?
So now that we're up at this 6, 7, 8% inflation numbers that we're having and projecting, this is entirely because of $4.6 trillion in printed money in the last 2 years since COVID, okay? So where inflation always stops, it causes bond rates to go up and borrowing costs to go up. It's one of the things that always pricks the late stages of a stock boom or bubble. And so this is just another thing that says, hey, stocks, you know, want to go up because of all the money printing, but the economy is weak underneath, and inflation is coming back way more than it should have, but because of all this money printing. And so the money printing helps the economy, then it turns around and helps and hurts it. In other words, what I've been saying for years now, you don't get something for nothing. All this money printing, instead of dealing with a crisis, restructuring debt productively.
It's not going to happen. There's no common sense to any of this. Let me tell you what I'm seeing. I mean, you got the Biden economic agenda is to spend more. And the president and his followers are still on the New Green Deal, which is energy, decapitates our energy entirely. And they've tried unsuccessfully thus far to get this other BBB pass and spend more money. They keep saying that's going to lower inflation. I mean, the thing is out of Oz. None of this is changing the desire to spend. They're going to spend. They're in office for another 3 years, and that'll be 2024, which you just laid out would be when things get better. But it sounds like it's going to get a lot worse. They're not going to change the trajectory they're on, Harry. So what you put out, what they should do, is not what they're going to do.
Hey, I have no confidence in these assholes whatsoever. Okay, I'll just make that clear. They are not going to stop. The only thing that stops them is the very monster they've created, this massive bubble. That's the price. All this money. They didn't send us checks in the mail to stimulate the economy. They bought bonds and poured money out of thin air in the financial markets, but trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions around the world. And it creates this bubble, and it's this bubble bursting. And I've studied bubbles more than anybody on earth now, Malcolm. The
right.
first crash, which I slid off in here, is 40 to 50% in 2 to 3 months. That wipes out. That, you know how many trillions of dollars, you know, that'll take out of the economy instantly? How much that will cause people's confidence in this boom to suddenly drop, including everyday people? That's the only thing that will stop this. I agree with you. They have been printing more money exponentially. Now, if you have to, for 13 years, print exponentially more money to keep an economy going, then it's telling you the economy's dead, just like I forecast it was 30 years ago, between 2008 and 2023. So it's going to take the stock market crashing. And that's what I think is happening right now. The number everybody needs to focus on is very simple. $540 trillion globally in financial assets, real estate, stock, bond, that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. 6 times global GDP. It's like 156 times 25 GDP in the U.S. This is the number that's going to stop this bubble burst, and it changes things. That's the biggest number in the world, bigger than GDP, bigger than debt, anything else. That's what I'm focusing on.
All right.
They cannot fight that when it happens, is what I'm
saying. All right. So let me now ask you this. Let's kind of go back and forth here. So looking at the current state then, Harry, let's just go with the scenario. They're going to keep doing what they're doing. It's not going to change. We both know that. Let's just play on that for a moment here.
No question about that.
All right. So now let's look back. So here's what I want to understand. I want listeners to understand. In preparation for our lives right now over the next few years, I just want to simply know, how bad should folks expect it to get? And will 2024 and 2025 bring, what are we going to go through before we get to the next horizon?
Okay, first of all, a major financial bubble like this, and this is bigger than 29 or anything we've seen ever in history, it's more global, it's all financial assets, it's not just stocks largely back then, real estate was not as bubbly in the 29s. This happens once every 90 years, literally, Malcolm.
Right.
So this is a big, it takes 2 to 3 years for a crash like this to work out, like 29 to 32, like 2000 to 2002, the first tech bubble burst, but we still had demographic trends in our favor, and we still had stimulus then. But now we don't have those demographic trends. So we basically should see the crash of our lifetime. That means bigger than 2008-9, more like 29 to 32, not quite that bad. I'm projecting, and this is just my best projection, the S&P 500, the biggest stock index in the U.S., will go down 86% by the end of 2023, give or take. Okay, that's big. And the next boom will not be as long or as strong as the baby boom from 1983 to 2007, which I was predicting decades in advance would happen. This is just what people do. The millennial boom will be 2024 to 2037. It will not be as steep, and it will not last nearly as long as the baby boom. But yes, that can bring us out of it. Between now and then, the best thing that can happen for the economy, that we do flush out all these bad debts, these zombie companies and bad debts, so that the millennials don't have to carry the baby boom debts into their future, which will darn near sink whatever boom they're going to have. Same thing with Japan. Japan peaked well before. Japan's done everything we're going to see. They peaked. They went down bad, big crashes. They came back modestly, and they're going to go down again. And Japan will never be great again.
All
we
right.
have to deal with debt crisis.
Okay. Biden has changed the energy and made his energy reliant again. And I'm asking you, people are really concerned about this. You know how many listener comments I get in about gas prices? So I'm asking you a real question. I think right now we're seeing $4 or $5 a gallon, but I'm guessing $6-$7 could be real. Is that not correct?
Could be real very near term. If we have the type of downturn, and globally I'm talking about, the demand for energy and oil will go down more than any freaking war with Putin can create. Okay.
All right. Talk to me.
Deflation is the trend, not inflation. Deflation in consumer prices, oil, you name it. Most things will go down in price. What you have to worry about is your home and your stocks and financial assets, because they will go down.
All right. Let me ask you this now. That's another thing. And before we run out of time, I get a lot of listeners are asking about real estate. Now, let me just get this out. Real estate is one of the other big hot buttons here that we get so many people questioning on. They're talking to people that want to buy homes. They don't know when they should. And they, well, yeah, hold on. It's a complex thing I'm throwing you here, because not only is the price of homes really high, but the price to rent the homes is really, really high. So a lot of people are struggling whether they're damned if they buy right now because the market's at really high and the price is going to pay a lot, and they're paying enormous amounts of rent. So housing is escalating by the second here. What does that look like right now?
The people who will be favored here were the ones that are lucky enough not to buy recently. Home prices will go down. The last time it was 34% on average, so more in more bubbly places. This time it's going to be more, 40 to 50%, not as much as stocks. Real estate never goes up or down as much as stocks. Mm-hmm. That's going to hit the people who own or bought more. The people who rent, yes, they're paying higher rents too, but rents will go down at least to some good degree when the economy gets weak. And those people will be the lucky ones. And then when you turn around, mortgage rates will eventually be even a little lower. And home prices, the best thing's going to happen to the younger generation entering the workforce, the millennials, is that home prices come down from the biggest bubble in modern history. We've seen two. The first bubble was into 2006. We had a 34% crash. This one is into 2021, 22, and we'll have a 40 to 50% crash. And home prices will come back to affordability. Right now, the biggest problem, yeah, people want to buy houses, the new millennials. They can't afford them. Affordability is the biggest problem in the housing market now.
Yeah, that's right. Harry, there's a lot going on economically. People are really, really unsettled right now. They're paying prices a ton more for a gallon of milk and a lot more for a gallon of gas. And housing pricing is really, really high. All of this is the inflation keeps going up. And people are really, really unsettled. And so short term, final point is there's going to be some more pain in the next year or two. These next couple of years are going to be tough, and people are going to probably have to tighten their belt. But there's no other way to get through this except get through it, isn't there?
Well, the best way is to get out of financial assets. You can sell your stocks and buy them back later. If you may not sell your primary home, but if you're thinking of downsizing, downsize now. If you have a vacation home you don't use much, and I sold mine, consumer prices and inflation, that will be taken care of. You don't have to worry about that. You have to worry about losing your job, and you most have to worry about everything you own financially, your house, and particularly stocks and things like that are going to go down more than you will ever see in your earlier lifetime or before you die. That's my prediction. The greatest of our lifetime next 2 years is very likely. If you just get out of the way of that, you preserve your investment accounts at the top when they're the best, and then you can buy when stocks are on sale 86% off, homes on sale 50% off. Then the fact that you protected your assets makes you king. You can now buy everything you ever wanted a lot.
That's it. That's what I'm seeing. I think that's
get
good.
Get out of the way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Harriet, I would ask you to stay close by for sure, because I think people are going to want to know the kinds of things that you're talking about right now. And I want to remind folks right now that you can connect with Harry a little bit more at harrydent.com. Again, they've got a lot of resources there. He's got a whole team of folks, and he's got a free newsletter you can subscribe to as well. And there's a lot of things. The point is, we need to be prepared and we need to know. And that's why I wanted to cover some of this with him to bring value to all of us when it comes to housing and, well, milk and gas and things that are essentially and what we should be doing just ahead here. So tremendous thank you to Harry Dent.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
I'm Dr. Peter McCullough. If you go to healthycell.com, you can check out the technology, the products of Healthy Cell. These are very innovative products. They are a form of bio-nutraceuticals that are bioactive, and they come in a variety of categories. One is Daily Essentials, which are the bioactive multi and the vegan essentials. And then the next category is Performance, And this is the REM sleep supplement. I've talked about it a lot. I think it's very effective, and I recommend it for myself and for my family, but as well as my patients. I'm having great luck with this because it is such a terrific product with a blend of, I think, is what's needed for not only promoting sleep, but also getting quality sleep. And when gets quality sleep, then there's restfulness, and the next day is better, and then the next night is better, and it becomes a progressively positive cycle for the human body. And the next product in the performance category is Focus and Recall. Focus and Recall. And I think that is the featured product that is coming into play for those with long COVID and brain fog that develops after COVID-19, the respiratory infection, but also after COVID-19 vaccination. So go to healthycell.com and check out the products. And in the promotional code, use the term out loud for 20% off your first purchase. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Because of COVID-19, many Americans worry about their health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per month. But by simply keeping our immune system strong, we can stay healthy and put our worries at ease. One little known way to do this is by taking AC11, a patented supplement from a plant in the Amazon rainforest. Studied for over 20 years and backed by over 40 scientific peer-reviewed studies, taking AC11 has been proven to extend the life of immune cells called leukocytes, allowing you to boost immunity naturally. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of AC11. That's healthycell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
We've been seeing a lot of grassroots movements in a lot of capacities around that strike at the heart of patriotism, where we're seeing a pushback now. And I'm reminded of this a little bit in regards to, well, look what's happening with our brothers and sisters in Ukraine right now. They're fighting for their very lives, and they're fighting in such a patriotic spirit. It's absolutely remarkable that you see that. And we can sort of see that happening here now. You see with the truckers movement in Canada, the people's convoy starting up here in our own country. We're seeing what happened in these elections where we're pushing back on the woke in the schools. And there's a whole lot of things happening. I want to bring your attention to a fascinating op-ed and a terrific gentleman and one of our experts on the platform here. Professor Larry Bell joins me right now here. He's an endowed professor at the University of Houston. He's a political analyst and author of a brand new book, very exciting, Beyond Flagpoles and Footprints, Pioneering the Space Frontier, with Buzz Aldrin. That was a co-authored book and very exciting project. That is available in the bookstore here at America Out Loud and on the front page here as you listen to the program. Professor Bell, it is always a joy to have you here, and I want to bring some light to this terrific op-ed you have on the platform at America Out Loud, Growing Grassroots Rejections of Progressive Authoritarian Policies. And these authoritarian policies we're speaking about, I've referenced the truckers movement, and we see the people's convoy here. But what I want to talk to you about is the pushback that's happening. We're starting to see across the plains here, people are pushing back. They want their freedoms and liberties back. And we're not just talking one particular political party. We're seeing it across the spectrum. And this is a bright of optimism I'd like you to talk about. We're seeing Republicans, Democrats, Independents. We're seeing them say, you know what? You've gone too far now. Address that point, please.
Yeah, Malcolm. And thank you again for having me on. I always enjoy our conversations. And as you mentioned, I think we're feeling a change now. And by we, I mean more than partisan change. But as you mentioned, certain demographics, I think we're seeing a shift among some young people, particularly college age and slightly older. And the Let's Go Brandon movement, we're seeing that. I don't know if the ones that are responding with Let's Go Brandon really see it as a political movement. I kind of interpret it more as saying, you know, things aren't right. We don't want to be shut down, closed down. We want to have our lives back. We want to, you know, we want to have the same freedoms that our parents had and so on. And
Well, I take that Brandon movement, Professor, as the fact that people are fed up with mandates. They don't want to walk around with a mask on all their life. They don't want to be jabbed multiple times every 3 months from another booster. And they're saying, and they're seeing the doubling and tripling down of Biden policies that are not impacting their life in any favorable way. And they're staying up at the ports arenas and they're saying, let's go, Brandon, which really is code for F you, Biden. Let's just put it right out there, brother.
Well, we're seeing, I think, also reflected in some of the polls. There's a, you know, polls are always suspicious. You never really, you know, totally trust them. But it seems that we're seeing now among likely voters, and particularly those that are under age under 30, we're seeing a shift of, you know, where 57% or so previously supported Biden. We're seeing indications he's down in the 30s now. And so
does that mean, Professor, they pushed too far? What you say there is so important for people to hear. Are we suggesting that now, if the young generations have finally turned on to what's going on, have these, whatever you want to call them, progressive Marxist globalists, have they pushed too far now, you think?
Well, I think what they're feeling, I think what people are feeling, particularly, you know, the younger people, partly it's the shutdown of the COVID since it's the mm-hmm. It's the overreach on a lot of these regulations. But I think they also see it perhaps in job markets now as they leave college and the inflation and the lack of optimism about the future of the country. And you know, I still teach. I'm 84 years old, but I still teach at the university in a program that I created many years ago there. And people want to be optimistic. They want to see a future. And the news has been, you know, so dismal for so long. The uncertainties are so large that I think we are seeing it's almost a literal wave because, you know, in the football stadiums and so on, you see the waves of "Let's go, Brandon." You say, "Well, what does that really mean?" And it's become a, you know, this FU rather sarcastic attack on the President of the United States. But I think beyond that, it's not just about Biden. It's they don't like what's happening in terms of the whole restrictive and depressive culture of the country right now. And mm-hmm. I think the response that, and that's a very important demographic that the Democrats and Biden had previously taken for granted.
Yeah, well, no, that's a demographic that got a lot of us concerned because it was a lot of the future of the country. And we've seen that play out with the Bernie Sanders camp and all the followers he was able to amass. And then that got kind of pushed into the Biden camp with their agreements and what have you and taking the election. There are a couple of telltale signs here for sure, Professor Bell, and there's a couple of really interesting points. You mentioned the polls. Yeah, they are all trending south. So while we may not be thinking every poll is whatever, they're all across the board tanking. So that is a trend that is massive in size, a Grand Canyon size. And that's real, obviously. People are not happy with this style. And Biden is the figurehead there. So whoever is him and those behind him, they're going to push back on that. Interesting out of, here's a perfect case here, Professor, and you talk about this in your piece. I mean, and I remember the news when this popped, it was like, wow. And, you know, speaking of San Francisco, for instance, and, you know, what happened there is sort of a, well, which you don't expect this in San Francisco, but about a political landslide as you would possibly get. With, as you reference here yourself, three uber progressive, and uber progressive would be as subtle as we could put it. School board members were ousted and said, you know, lost totally. And we're talking, Larry, not by small numbers here, but more than 70% margins here. And we're talking San Francisco here, not to mention what took place in Virginia with McAuliffe that and Glenn Youngkin, who took that. These are very interesting case studies in what we're talking about, correct?
I think that's another demographic that we're looking at now, which is centered on parents. And this crosses partisan lines. Above all, people care about their children. And I think they're responding to a number of things. One is that the shutdowns have been very destructive to the learning opportunities of their children, and they're learning to socialize with one another. The mask mandates, the terrible service, educational services being provided by the teachers unions and the arrogance of the teachers unions. And then there's the racial horrors of critical race theory that are being taught, and the lack of recognition of our history and accomplishments of our country with the 1619 Project and rewriting the history. I think we're seeing parents that are very alarmed about what's happening. I think people are responding to, I think sensibly, about the mandates of vaccinations for young children and for pregnant women. And it's this cascading confluence of issues that I think are affecting suburban mothers and parents of all stripes.
Well, and they're pushing back on that critical race theory as well, and all of these racist tendencies coming out of there, Larry. I mean, they've had enough, and rightfully so. I mean, especially when this buffoon here, McAuliffe, come out and says, well, don't let the parents tell us what the hell to teach their kids. I mean, this guy's an imbecile.
And the Democrats are waking up that this is a very real threat to them, because you know what happened with Youngkin in Virginia, of course, and you can't get much bluer than Virginia. And I think much of it too was seeing the reaction to it in terms of we see the Justice Department raising this fear of charging parents with terrorism for defending
rights.
You know, we're seeing that. I think we see the same with, you know, and going to the truckers issue, where on one hand we see the truckers responding to, of course, a lot of the COVID shutdowns and issues as well. But I think the response of the government is what's horrifying people, to say, well, the government is acting as a total tyrannical way. And we're realizing that the government and the agencies that we count on to protect us have become embedded with those that we really have good reason to fear.
The Marxist left are very creative, and they see this stuff happening. They know how to outsmart the foxiest fox, to be sure. And so they're going to start to cycle back now. You're going to not hear many of these stories, and they're not going to want to, you know, push any of this radical agenda right now in the next many months, because I think they realize they've shaken things a little too far. Can we keep the pressure on, and does this become what I call an American wave, not a red wave or a blue wave, but I'd love to see an American wave, Professor Bell, where America stands up and says, you know, these are independents, Democrats, but we've had enough. We're not going to put up with this anymore.
I think a lot of it they can't retreat from, and 2022 is coming up with the midterms very rapidly, and you can't turn off these radical policies. I don't think we have a leader in the government that can withstand the pressure of this small cabal of super radicals that are dragging him around by the nose. I think he can't reverse course.
Interesting.
Without admitting that they've been wrong all along.
Kind of right. That genie is already out of the bottle, and it's all over the place. And how they're going to put that back in time, I think I agree with you on that point. I've been wondering on that point, to be sure. But I think it is a very valid point to bring up here. That piece, again, my friends, from Professor Larry Bell, his writings are always terrific to read. And growing grassroots rejections of progressive authoritarian policies is a great read, and it gives you a sense of the reality and hopefully the optimistic viewpoint of what could happen here. Tremendous thank you to Professor Larry Bell here, economist Harry Dent and all that he brought to it, Adele Wilbur and Colonel Lawrence Sellin, and the military application of what's taking place and the seriousness of the moment is not lost on us here at all here. Thank you again, my fellow Americans and those around the world for listening here. It's time to get involved and get loud.